Good afternoon, everyone. We're on the Curious Bodhi podcast, straight from London, Victoria Park. Today, I have on Eric Zimmer, who's been around the block in terms of his knowledge on meditation and what it takes to beat addiction in terms of meditation practice. He's interviewed guests on his podcast called The One You Feed, such as Sharon Salzberg, Don Miguel Ruiz, Michael Pollan, and Lama Surya Das. He has presented a TEDx talk with his popular speech titled The Battle of Changing Your Behavior, and this leads right into our conversation about how meditation changed his life, and we share some experiences about what we encounter during meditation, and there's some useful tips in here on what happens during addiction, what to do, what to avoid, and in general, it's a good conversation, so let's begin. I understand you were on a recent silent retreat with Adyashanti. Can you tell us about that? And who is Adyashanti, by the way?
Yeah, Adyashanti is an American spiritual teacher, kind of a non-dual spiritual teacher, although he came up in the Zen tradition. And yes, I was just on a week-long silent retreat with him. It's the third one with him I've done.
The third one. He's been a guest on your podcast as well.
Yes, multiple times he has. I think maybe three times now.
On your retreats with Adyashanti, do you feel as if you gain something more and more as time goes on with him, or are you in the same place you were as you were on the first retreat?
That's a really good question. I'm not quite sure exactly how to answer it. I don't feel like I'm in the same place that I was, but I'm not sure that I gain more each time either. Each one is very different depending on where I am. So on the first retreat with him, I had some pretty big awakenings and realizations. The second retreat, I had some of that, not quite as much. And then this last retreat was, I would really describe it as sort of more ordinary, like not bad, but just kind of 7 days of silence and some peace, but nothing, you know, I didn't walk out of there like, oh, well, now I understand this, or I had this awakening, or any of that. I didn't feel like I changed that much in that moment. However, obviously, we never really know what experiences change us over a period of time until we look back at them later.
That's very, very true. Last night I was meditating and I didn't get much sleep actually because I had a huge emotional release and I definitely wasn't expecting that. So I understand where you're coming from. Sometimes it's completely out of the blue what happens, and sometimes it's rather ordinary.
Right, exactly.
So what brought you to the spiritual path, and can you give a little bit about your spiritual background? Are you a Buddhist? What's going on there?
Yeah, so I was introduced to Zen Buddhism by a high school teacher, and so it sort of captured my interest. And you know, then at 18, I took some transcendental meditation courses. And then from there, I sort of spiraled into 7 years of pretty serious addiction. At the end, I was a homeless heroin addict who was, you know, had about 30 plus years of jail time pending. I was really sick with hepatitis C. So then I got into recovery, and then the spiritual path for me at that point became less of a interesting diversion, really, and more of what I needed to stay alive. I came up in 12-step programs, and at the heart of the 12-step program is that it's a spiritual connection to whatever, right? However it's defined, but it's that spiritual connection to quote-unquote a higher power, right? That determines whether you remain sober. And I'm not sure I entirely believe that now, but I did then. And so, you know, I embarked pretty heavily down a spiritual path at that point. And, you know, as I began to investigate my spiritual path a little bit more, I was really drawn towards Buddhism. And that's primarily where I have studied and been interested, although, you know, I certainly spent some time looking at Taoism and Christianity and sort of, you know, a more other non-dual paths. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
So Zen sort of led you into the non-dual discovery. And from there, it's been unfolding for you, you would say?
Yeah, I would say that to a little bit more specifically. So for years, I was reading and studying Buddhism, and I heard about non-self or no self, right? Or, you know, I didn't really hear the phrase non-dual a lot in those days, right? This was over the last 20 years or so. I think it was when I first interviewed Adi Ashanti and preparing to interview him that I sort of got my first sort of taste of, you know, of what some people would call like the direct path, right? The really staring right at identity and self and non-dual things. That was probably my deepest introduction to it, and the first time that it really landed on me and I began to experience it and investigate it more deeply. I think up till then, a lot of my Buddhist work had been really a lot focused on relieving of suffering. So, you know, more of the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path and those things, but it wasn't really till I sort of, I think, got involved with reading Adi Ashanti to prepare for an interview that whole area of non-self or no-self that I had read about a little bit in Buddhism, but I hadn't really engaged with because it just didn't speak to me at that point in my life.
That's funny. I went the other way around. I started with non-duality and then leapt into Buddhism because sometimes the path that you start with doesn't give you the full sort of result, or it doesn't fulfill what you need at that time. It can give you insights, but in terms of longevity, sometimes we have to change our path, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's sort of the modern dilemma of the spiritual person, which is we have endless numbers of spiritual teachings available to us, and what is the right balance of, you know, sort of sampling the buffet, so to speak, right, versus really going deep into one path. And I think that's different for everyone. I don't think there is a right answer there, but that's certainly been my experience that I needed different things at different times.
Can I ask how meditation or how your spiritual path and your spiritual life, how has that helped you recover from addiction? What actually changed?
Well, as I said, in those days, I believed strongly that a spiritual life was key to recovery from addiction, because that's what I've been taught in 12-step programs, but that I don't know that I fully believe that anymore. But here is what I do believe in relation to spiritual practice and recovery from addiction, right? I think that addiction is fundamental disconnection. Right, it's a disconnection from everything in life, ultimately, right? It ultimately becomes that the only thing that you have any connection to, and the thing that is your personal God, is your substance, right? Your drug of choice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think recovery is a process of connecting, reconnecting out into the world, whether that be with your own deeper nature, your own spiritual nature, whether that be other people in recovery, whether it be your family, whether it be nature, whatever it is. I think that recovery is about reconnection, but I don't know that it has to be spiritual connection. I think that's one way to do it, but I think that it's whatever works for a person to help them reconnect to life.
Right. And the word spiritual can take on many connotations. It can be quite philosophical, or it can have some sort of abstract meaning to different people. But what you're saying is really, really telling, because spirituality is reality. It's truth. It's something that is here now. It's not something in the sky or some idea. So I just want to reiterate that for our listeners, that it can be taking a walk in nature. It doesn't have to be a religion, doesn't have to be an idea. It is whatever helps you in life, flow with life.
Yeah, I interviewed, there's a Franciscan priest, Richard Rohr, who's a sort of a mystic in the Christian tradition. A contemplative for sure, and writes a lot about non-dual awakening, but he does it through a Christian lens. And so I interviewed him recently out in New Mexico, and he said in his latest book, he has a line that I won't get it exactly right. He said, essentially, whatever it is that is pulling you out of yourself into deeper connection is effectively functioning as God for you in that moment. And I think that's a really great definition, because if we go back to addiction, right, addiction is all about constriction, right? It's your life gets smaller and smaller, and you just close in on yourself and your drug, and that becomes everything, right? The recovery process is this expansion outwards. Right? Mm-hmm. And so, in that case, I think that's a really good description. And my experience of spiritual growth has always been one of expansion. It's always been one of, I know I'm on the right track when what I'm doing is connecting me more deeply to life. You know, Adi Ashanti has said before that all ego really is a contraction. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it is. It's contracting, right? And so this idea of expansion, of flowing outwards, I think is a pretty good definition of what a quote-unquote good spirituality would be.
Sure. So if you expanded and flowed outwards forever without limitation or without holding back, then you would be awake, correct?
That's certainly one way to look at it, yes. And my experience of awakening, such as I have had at different points, has certainly been one of, even in the words we use, the small self dissolves into the larger self, right? Or the universal self. So it's that same motion there, right? It's that same motion from my small egoic concerns to, into merging with everything in the sort of mystical union idea of awakening. Now there are deeper levels that people talk about, the ground of being or emptiness, but the awakenings, the profound awakenings such that I have had have always been sort of unity experiences where I truly feel connected to everything in a profound and deep way that I can't really put into words, except that I feel really, really big. Not in an egoic sense, but my connection with everything is undeniable and obvious, and the peace that comes from that is staggering.
That's amazing. I was just talking about this with my husband yesterday, actually. We think it's funny that on the spiritual path, when we have some insights and we gain that larger awareness, or even when we have very curious questions, oftentimes this has no practical function. We're not going to make money from it. We're not going to be famous from it. Nobody's going to like us more from it. It's just, it has to be that way. It fulfills you in some sort of different way.
Right, absolutely. I think that's a good way of saying it.
Have you heard of Paul Hederman?
That name is familiar to me, but I don't... So I've heard the name, but I beyond that, no, I don't know of Paul.
He reminds me of the track that you're taking. He's on YouTube, and he's a non-dual, I guess you could say, teacher, but he just enjoys speaking, but he was addicted for years, 20 to 30 years. Alcohol was his drug of choice, and he had a non-dual awakening, and now he just sits and talks, and he's really good. You have to watch him speak, but it reminds me.
I will check him out for sure. Paul Hederman.
Yeah, Paul Hederman. I wanted to ask you also about your time with Sharon Salzberg and Lama Surya Das. What brought you? What brought you guys together?
Well, my podcast is what brought us together. I mean, they were guests on the show. Before that, I was familiar with both of their works. They're relatively well known Buddhist author. So as I was, you know, over the last 20 years sort of studying Buddhism, I came across both of their works and enjoyed the things to say. I think Lama Surya Das's book, I think it's called Awakening the Buddha Within. I'm not certain if it's exactly that's the one it is, but was really a pretty profound book for me a long time ago. And I've always really enjoyed Sharon Salzberg's work also. So, They were kind enough to be guests on the show.
Yeah, they're some of my heroes, especially Lama Surya Das. He's got some amazing insights into Dzogchen. Have you dabbled in Dzogchen?
A little bit. I wouldn't say I've studied it deeply. I have a lot of the meditation I would say is more of that sort of style of meditation, more of an open awareness type of meditation, less than it is a focus on an object meditation, although I certainly do both. So in that way, I think that some of what I do is similar to Dzogchen. I can never say that name. I can never say that word right. Say it again.
Dzogchen.
Dzogchen, yes. So I think, you know, some of the ways I might approach meditation are similar, but I've not studied it deeply.
Yeah, Surya Das's work is really accessible, but of course there's very deep practices. It's tied to Vajrayana, I believe, and some of their teachings are very underground, so... But yeah, his stuff is really accessible, and I started with the awareness practice also. It's a really good way of expanding because you can lose your sense of your body even.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that? You lose your body and your mind goes outwards.
Certainly sometimes, yes, absolutely. You know, I have found that sort of open awareness practice to be yes, it can cause some of that losing of body or expansion. It's also a really good way to kind of get to know your mind. You know, because if what you're doing is watching what shows up in consciousness, you get a pretty clear sense of like, oh, wow, all right, look at that. That's what my brain is doing. You know, that's what it, the way it works. I found it really helpful in that way too, to sort of gain a better understanding of how the process of consciousness unfolds within me.
Sure. I wanted to ask, if you have taken psychedelics for the same reason ever.
That's an interesting question. The answer is not exactly. So yes, I have taken psychedelics, but they were a long time ago. They were back more in the period where I was in, active addiction prior to heroin, and I use them primarily as recreational. However, even in using them from a recreational perspective, it was extremely profound and transformative in some ways, but I was not in a place that I was ready to really be transformed at a deep level, and I didn't go into it with that approach, so I think it was somewhat limited in what I got from them. I have not done them since then. It's something I am interested in, perhaps, but I would really be looking for the very right set and setting, and I just haven't come across that yet in a way that has made me feel like that's comfortable. And as somebody with addiction issues, I am cautious. I know that those drugs are generally not considered addictive, right? And that oftentimes they have been shown to be help with other addictions. I also know that something that feels really good to me, I have a tendency to just do it as often as I can. That's kind of my nature. And so no, I've not used them since early days, but I do see, I see the ability for them to potentially be profound in that way. I've heard some other teachers recently say something along the lines of like, well, I kind of stopped doing them because I kind of got tired of getting kicked out of Eden over and over and over again, right? So I think they can be useful, but they haven't been part of my journey since very early on.
Sure. They're not for everybody, and they're not for every moment in time. Sometimes they can show us something very profound, but sometimes the insights are actually not very godlike or not what we expect. So they definitely have their place and their time and their moments. But I would say, like you, they're not necessary, especially with people who have a habitual or a tendency to want to do things again and again. I have that same sort of leaning, I would say. Sort of an addictive personality. I like the same things over and over. So, yeah, I stay away from them as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to touch on something else. In terms of meditation and going into your practice, how do you handle feelings that are difficult, like anxiety and fear, or anything at a very primal level that comes up?
Well, honestly, for me, I don't get a lot of that in my meditation practice, and I don't quite know why that is. You know, part of me goes, well, maybe I'm just not going deep enough. The other piece of it is I did years of really intense therapy, a lot of, deep childhood work, almost inner child type work. So I feel like a lot of my quote unquote emotional demons and deep emotional things I have worked my way through them at some level of depth outside of meditation. I'm not saying there may not be more there, but it's generally not something that comes to me in meditation. My meditation challenges tend to be more of the typical hindrances of, restlessness or sleepiness. And I seem to, get past one of them to just encounter the next one. And then there's other times that my meditation feels pretty deep, but I'm not having a lot of emotional release or letting go or cleansing happen as part of my meditation practice. So I can't really speak to it a whole lot. you know, whatever does come up in meditation, I try and make the object of meditation. You know, it's back to that open awareness practice. If I'm feeling really restless, then I try and get very curious. What does restlessness feel like? What is it like? If I do feel some degree of sadness or, you know, other feelings, then I try and, you know, turn my attention to those. But I wouldn't say that emotion is a strong part of what comes up for me in meditation.
So you haven't encountered any primal fear, like getting scared of what you might encounter during the meditation process?
I have a couple of times, and those times were sort of before, you know, within days of a fairly big awakening. So yes, they have come. I don't know that I would describe it as primal fear, though. I would say there was an anxiety there. There was a unsettledness there. But I wouldn't describe it as primal fear. Now, again, those things might be right around the corner for me, for all I know. You just never really know. Like I said, that's not a typical part of what comes up for me.
Sure, that's lucky. That's lucky, actually. Very good.
Well, maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe, maybe not.
There's that old, farmer and his horse story, right? Could be good, could be bad. Don't know.
We don't know. All we know is what we experience, right?
That's it.
Now, my last two questions, I just want to ask you, firstly, if you can put one of your best insights into words, what would that be? And also, where are you going from here?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with the second one, because the first one I feel like is something I would almost need to think about, but I will give you an answer. But where am I going from here? Interestingly, what I am about to embark on is a training program for spiritual directorship. So spiritual directorship is an idea, primarily comes out of the Catholic Church, but it's sort of spread into other areas, and it's about how to sort of guide people and help people discern what's happening for them in their spiritual lives, and help bring people into a deeper, you know, into a deeper engagement with their spiritual life. And it's something I've been interested in, and I'm about to embark on an 18-month training in that area. And I think that'll be really interesting, because as part of it, you know, I need to be finding and having, quote unquote, my own spiritual director that I work with very closely. So I think that's what's kind of next for me. I don't know what that's going to lead to or how it's going to really look yet, but that's my next sort of foray, is into doing that. And then, you know, I'm always trying to find more and more opportunities to go into silence. So, you know, finding more time to have periods of silence. So that's kind of my core practice is that, but I'm expanding it into this other area. If I had to put my realization into words, I guess I would say my deepest realization put into words is the deep interconnection of all things, that really we are way more connected to what's going on in the world and all the things around us than we think we are. And that can be very much an intellectual understanding. And even if it's only intellectual, it's a really helpful understanding, right? Like if I sometimes I'll stop and I'll think about, like, the food that I'm about to eat. Like, all the things that had to happen for me to be here with this bit of food, right? All the sunshine, all the rain, all the people who planted it, the people who's planted it, its parents, right? Their parents, the people who boxed the food, the people who shipped it. It's just this endless web. And even just seeing that on an intellectual level, I find can be really helpful, because it makes me realize, like, I am not over here alone in this thing, right? There is this deep interconnection of all things. But then my deeper experiences have been that very experientially. And when that is an experience for me, it is, you know, what's the old, I think it's an old biblical phrase, right? Like the peace that passeth all understanding, right? That's that experience of deep interconnection when it's experienced for me is one of a deep peace that goes far beyond any other that I have ever experienced. So I guess that would be how I would answer that question.
That's awesome. So we have some contemplation and some inner peace. Amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And then, like I said, as far as practice goes, I think stillness is a practice that just, you know, has never led me wrong.
Sure. It's hard to sit still sometimes inside.
It very much is. One of the things that I have really worked on experiencing more and was sort of a breakthrough for me was when I was asked the question, well, is there really not stillness right now? And realizing stillness is not the absence of thought or things happening. Stillness is the context that it all happens in.
Yes. Right?
So thoughts pop up and then they disappear into stillness. Sounds pop up, they disappear into stillness. The stillness is always there, underlying everything. And so we often think we have to create it, but that's not my experience. That's not really how it works, right? It's to notice it as the context that everything is happening in. Notice that if I just, you know, ask myself, you know, is it true that stillness is not here? And I stop and I look and I go, no, there it is. It's right, you know. And it's that idea of awareness. Awareness is that sort of still watching. And so when I started looking at it that way, instead of something I had to create, I was more able to find stillness even in the midst of what felt like a lot of internal movement and thoughts.
Right. So it's putting it in the proper context, actually. That makes a lot of sense, and I'm sensing it now. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting practice. Instead of trying to create it, notice it's already there.
Sure. That was easy. All right, Eric. So where can our listeners find you when you embark on your new venture?
Well, the place to go is oneyoufeed.net. The podcast is there. My coaching program, I know I offer coaching services, it's there. We recently offered we've done a couple spiritual habits workshops about like how do we really take spiritual principles and really embody them into our lives, like really live them more deeply. So if you get on the mailing list at oneyoufeed.net, you'll hear about all that stuff. And of course, that's where all of the podcasts are, which is, you know, kind of my, you know, it's my big thing. It's the podcast, so.
Sure. oneyoufeed.net. Awesome.
Yep.
Right. It was a pleasure to have you on. 30 minutes is never long enough, but I'm sure we'll have to do this again.
Yeah, anytime. It was a real pleasure talking with you, and I greatly appreciate you asking me to be on.
Om, thank you.